Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Kiss of the Highlander by Karen Marie Mawning, performed by Phil Giganti. Chapter 15. Hours later, an anxious Gwyn paced before the fire in the silver chamber. The day had dragged endlessly on with no sign of Druston. If he'd only return, she'd clear things up and they could set about figuring out who the enemy was. After a scrumptious breakfast of poached eggs, potatoes, and dried salted fish in the hall with Sylvan, Nell had given her a brief tour, pointing out garter robes and the like. She'd spent a few hours in the library, then had retired to her chamber to await Druston. Dagus had ridden in a few hours ago without him. He said they'd parted ways at the tavern. Sylvan had drawn his younger son, younger by a mere 3 minutes, into their plan, and Dagus, grinning and casting Gwyn steamy glances. Did he have to drip as much raw sex appeal as Druston? Now held the door to the corridor ajar a crack, watching for Druston's approach. He'd been spotted riding into the stable a quarter hour past.
"I can't believe you placed her in the chamber that adjoins Druston's," Dagus said over his shoulder.
Sylvan shrugged defensively.
"She said his name last night, and besides, 'tis the third nicest in the castle. Yours and Druston's are the only two more lavishly furnished."
"I'm not certain she should be sleeping so close to him."
"Where should I move her? Nearer to your chamber?" Sylvan countered. "Druston denies knowing her. You kissed her. Who poses more of a threat to her?"
Gwyn flushed, grateful that Dagus didn't point out that she demanded he kiss her. He glanced at her sidewise and flashed her a seductive look. God, he was gorgeous, she thought, watching his glossy, waist-length hair slide silkily as he angled his head to argue over his shoulder with Sylvan. How could two such devastating men exist in one castle? Not that she was attracted to him, but she'd have to be dead not to appreciate his raw male virility.
"Why are you helping me?"
she asked Sylvan, nudging the conversation in a less disconcerting direction. He smiled faintly.
"Don't fash yourself over my motives, my dear."
"You would be wise to fash yourself over his motives, lass,"
Dagus cautioned dryly.
"When Da bothers to involve himself, he always has ulterior motives. Schemes within schemes, and inevitably he knows more than he lets on."
"Do you?"
She peered at the charming grandfatherly man.
"Innocent as a little lamb ambling the hillside, my dear," Sylvan said mildly.
Dagus shook his head at her.
"Do not believe a word of it. But nor should you waste your breath trying to get more out of him. He's quiet as the grave with his little secrets."
"I'm not the only one who keeps secrets around here, lad,"
Sylvan said with a sharp glance. Father and son battled with their gazes a few moments. Then Dagus dropped his eyes and looked back out into the corridor. An awkward silence reigned, and Gwyn wondered what she was missing, what secrets a man like Dagus kept. Feeling like the perpetual outsider looking in, she changed the subject again.
"Are you sure he won't listen? Are you certain we need to go to such extremes?"
A pile of wood planks and bolts lay near the adjoining door, and the longer Gwyn looked at it, the more nervous she became.
"My dear, you accused him of taking your maidenhead. Nay, he'll not speak to you if he can avoid it."
Dagus nodded agreement.
"He's coming,"
he warned them.
"Into the boudoir with you, my dear,"
Sylvan urged.
"When you hear him enter his chamber, count to 10, then join him. I'll block this door, and Dagus will take the other. We won't permit him to leave until you've had your say."
Squaring her shoulders, Gwyn drew a deep breath and plunged into the boudoir. She listened intently for the sound of Druston's door opening and realized to her chagrin that she was trembling. She flinched when she heard the door open and counted to 10 slowly, giving Dagus time to sneak out of her chamber and blockade the door from the corridor. Sylvan had chuckled when he'd told her that if Druston refused to listen, he and Dagus would do their best to bar him in from the outside by hammering a plank or two over the doors. God, she hoped it didn't come to that. Time was up. She turned the handle and quietly opened the door. His back was to her, and he was facing the fire, staring into it. He'd changed into snug leather pants, a billowy linen shirt, and boots. His silky black hair spilled unbound over his shoulders and down his back. He looked as if he'd stepped straight off the cover of one of those romance novels she ordered from Amazon.com, so she didn't have to be embarrassed by some supercilious male clerk in the bookstore. Ha, she thought. When she returned to her time, she was going to start buying them flagrantly, with no apologies. She'd never seen a man blush while buying Playboy. But she had to survive the wrath of Drustin McKelter first. Murmuring a silent prayer, she closed the door behind her. He spun around the moment it clicked shut, and when he saw her, his silver eyes glittered dangerously. Shaking a finger, he stalked toward her, and she skittered away from the door in case he planned to toss her out it again. He followed like a magnet to steel.
"Don't I even think, English, that I'll be tolerating more of your lies," he said with silky menace. "And best you get out of my chamber, because I've had enough whiskey that I'm of a mind to taste the crime of which I've been accused."
His gaze drifted meaningfully to the massive bed, draped in silk and covered with velvet pillows. Gwyn's eyes widened. Indeed, his expression was a combination of fury and raw lust. The raw lust was perfectly wonderful. The anger she'd cheerfully do without. She was going to be cool and rational this time. No stupid comments, no emotional outbursts. She would tell him what had happened, and he would see reason. She hastened to reassure him.
"I'm not trying to get you to marry me."
"Good, because I won't," he growled,
closing the distance between them, using his body to intimidate her. She planted her feet and held her ground. Given that her nose came only to his solar plexus, it wasn't as easy as she made it look.
"What's this?" he purred softly. "You do not fear me. You should fear me, English."
He closed his hands around her upper arms like bands of steel. Sylvan and Dagus must be pressing their ears to the doors, waiting for his explosion, she thought, but they'd misjudged him. This was not a man who exploded. He seethed quietly and infinitely more dangerously.
"Answer me," he demanded, shaking her. "Are you such a fool that you have no fear of me?"
She'd rehearsed her speech a dozen times, yet when he stood so close to her, it was difficult to remember where she decided to begin. Her lips parted as she stared up at him.
"Please."
"Please what?"
he said silkily, lowering his head to hers.
"Please kiss you. Please take you the way you accuse me of already having had you. I've had a long time to think today, English, and I must confess that I find myself fascinated by you. I rode for hours before stopping in the tavern. I drank for hours, yet fear all the whiskey in Fair Alba wouldn't cleanse you from my mind. Have you spelled me, witch?"
"No, I have not spelled you. I am not a witch, and please don't kiss me," she managed.
God, she wanted him. Whether he knew her or not, it was her Drustin, damn it all, just a month and 5 centuries younger.
"Ugh, that's a rare request from a woman," he mocked. "Especially one who says she's already tasted my loving. Do you now disparage my intimate attentions?"
His gaze was silver ice, challenging.
"Was I less than satisfying? You claim we're lovers. Mayhap we should be again. It would seem I've left a less than favorable impression."
He closed his hand about her wrist and tugged her toward the bed.
"Come."
She dug her heels in, a feat in soft slippers on a planked wood floor. Her protests whooshed from her lungs when he scooped her into his arms and tossed her onto the bed. She landed on her back, sank deep into velvet-covered feather mattresses, and before she could scramble away, he was on top of her, his body stretched the length of hers, pinning her with his weight. She closed her eyes to shut out the sight of his beautiful, angry face. She would never be able to carry on a meaningful conversation with him in this position.
"Drustin, please listen to me. I'm not trying to trap you into marriage, and there's a reason why I said what I said this morning. If you'll just listen," she said, eyes squeezed tightly shut.
"There's a reason why you lied. There's never a reason to lie, lass," he growled.
Does that mean you never lie?
She said snidely, opening her eyes a slit and peeping at him. She was still miffed that he hadn't told her the entire truth before sending her back.
Nay, I dinna lie.
Bullshit! Sometimes not telling all of the truth is exactly the same as lying, she snapped.
Such language from a lady. But you're no lady, are you?
Well, you're certainly no gentleman. This lady didn't ask you to throw her in your bed.
But you like being beneath me, lass, he said huskily. Your body tells me much your words deny.
Gwyn stiffened, horrified to realize she had hooked her ankles over his legs and was rubbing a slipper against one muscular calf. She pushed at his chest.
Get off me! I can't talk to you when you're squishing me!
Forget about talking, he said roughly, lowering his head to hers.
Gwyn shrank back deeper into the pillows, knowing the moment he kissed her, she would be lost. Just as his lips brushed hers, the boudoir door opened and Sylvan stepped briskly in.
Ahem!
Sylvan cleared his throat. Drustin's lips froze against hers.
Get out of my chamber, da. I will handle this as I see fit, he growled.
But you didn't top her last eve, eh?
Sylvan remarked mildly, his gaze sweeping over them.
Things look cozy to me for being strangers and all. Aren't you forgetting something, or should I say, someone? The lass told me you were in danger. The only danger I perceive is that of you botching yet another perfectly good—
Hold your waist!
Drustin roared. Stiffening, he pushed himself off her and sat back on his heels on the bed.
Duh, you are no longer chieftain here, remember? I am. You quit. Get out!
He flung an impatient hand toward the door.
No.
I merely came to see if Gwyn required assistance,
Sylvan said calmly.
She requires no assistance. She wove this web with her lies. Do not be blaming me for knotting her up in it.
My dear?
Sylvan asked, eyeing her.
It's all right, Sylvan, you can go, she said softly. Dagus, too.
Sylvan regarded her a moment more, then inclined his head and backed out of the room. When the door closed again, Drustin got off the bed and stood several paces away from her.
What did Sylvan mean by someone?
She asked.
Botching a perfectly good what?
He eyed her in stony silence. She scrambled up and eyed him warily, and although she could see desire glittering in his gaze, she could also see that he thought better of trying to have sex with her for the moment. She was both relieved and disappointed.
Talk. Why have you come here, and what is your purpose?
He asked stiffly. When she was seated before the fire, Drustin poured a glass of whiskey and leaned back against the hearth, facing her. He took a generous swallow, studying her discreetly over the rim of his glass. He had a difficult time thinking clearly in her presence, partly because she was so damn beautiful, and partly because she'd put him on the defensive with her outrageous claim the moment he'd laid eyes on her. The intensity of his attraction to her upset him more greatly even than her lie. She was the last thing he needed right before his wedding. Walking, nay, lushly sauntering temptation to make a fankle of things. Initially, he'd meant merely to intimidate her by pushing her back on the bed. But then, he'd touched her and she'd looped her ankles over his calves, and he'd gotten lost in the welcoming softness of her body beneath him. Had his father not interrupted, he'd like as not still be atop her. The moment he'd walked into the castle tonight, he'd felt the wee English within his walls. He responded fiercely to her. All it took was one glance at her to stir feelings in him he couldn't explain. He'd told the truth when he said he couldn't get her out of his mind. Not for one moment. He knew the scent of her, had been able to recall it even while sitting amidst the smelly, ale-soaked rushes in the tavern. Hers was a clean, cool, and sensual fragrance, a blend of spring rain, vanilla, and mysteries. As he'd sat in the tavern, he realized that somehow he knew she had a dimple on one side of her luscious mouth when she smiled, although he couldn't recall having seen her smile.
Smile, he demanded.
What? She looked at him as if he'd lost his mind.
I said, smile, he growled.
She smiled weakly.
Aye, plain as day, a dimple on the left side.
He sighed heavily. His gaze drifted over her features, lingering on the witch mark on her cheekbone, and he wondered how many others she had, in more intimate places.
He'd like to search. Connect the patches with his tongue, he thought, his gaze lingering on the creamy expanse of cleavage above the scooped bodice of her gown. He shook his head impatiently. Out with it. What's so important, English, that you lied to gain my attention this morn?
Gwyn,
she corrected absently. She was pinching her plump lower lip between her thumb and forefinger, and the gesture was making him damn uncomfortable.
Goddess of the moon, he translated silently, and she looked every inch a goddess.
You already know my name, and since you claimed such familiarity with me, I won't stand on ceremony and insist you call me my lord.
Her immediate scowl made his lips twitch, but he kept his face impassive. She did not respond to his comment. Her self-control chafed him. He'd far prefer her off-balance, reacting blindly. Then he'd feel more in control. She eyed him warily.
I don't know where to begin, so I ask that you hear me out completely before you start getting angry again. I know once you hear my whole story, you'll understand.
You're going to tell me something else to upset me? What else have you left? You've already accused me of taking your maidenhead, yet you claim you do not seek to trap me into marriage. What do you seek?
Do you promise to hear me out? No interruptions until the end?
After a moment's consideration, he conceded. Sylvan had said she claimed he was in some kind of danger. What harm was there in listening? If he left the room without letting her have her say, he'd have to be on constant guard lest Sylvan lock him in the guardrobe so she might shout at him through the door. And until he'd cleared things up, he was quite certain he wasn't going to see a single batch of kippers and tatties from Nell. There'd been none of his thick, black, exotic coffee all day either. Nay, he had to set things to rights. He enjoyed his comforts and didn't intend to suffer one more day without them. Besides, the sooner he cleared things up, the sooner he could pack her off and get her out of his sight. Shrugging, he gave his pledge. She nibbled her lip, hesitating a moment.
You're in danger, Drustan.
I am well aware of that, though I suspect we're not referring to the same thing, he muttered darkly.
This is serious. Your life is in danger.
He grinned faintly, gaze skimming her from head to her toes.
Och, we won. And next you'll tell me you plan to save me, eh? Mayhap fight off my attackers yourself? Bite them in the knee?
Oh, that wasn't nice. And if you're too stupid to listen to me, I'll have to.
She snapped.
Consider me warned, lass. He placated her. I've listened. Now go on with you, he said abruptly, dismissing her. Tell Sylvan I heard you out, so he'll call off his little siege. I have things to do.
At the earliest opportunity, he would have Nell secure her a position in the village, far from the castle. Nay, mayhap he'd have Dagus cart her off to Edinburgh and find her work there. One way or another, he had to get the bewitching lass out of his domain before he did something foolish and irrevocable. Like toss her into bed and tup her until neither one of them could move, until his muscles ached from loving her. Would she score his shoulders with her nails, he wondered? Arch her neck and make sweet, mewling noises? He stiffened instantly at the thought. He turned his back on her, hoping it might lessen whatever spell she'd cast upon him.
Don't you even want to know what kind of danger?
She asked incredulously. He sighed and glanced over his shoulder, one sardonic brow arched. What would it take, he wondered irritably, to make the wee lass cower? A sword at her throat?
You said you'd hear the whole story. Was that a lie? You who claim you don't lie?
Fine, he said impatiently, turning back around. Tell me all of it and have it done with.
Maybe you should sit down,
she said uneasily.
Nay, I will stand and you will speak.
He folded his arms across his chest.
You're not making this easy.
I don't intend to speak or leave. Don't waste my time.
She took a deep breath.
Okay, but I'm warning you, it's going to sound pretty far-fetched at first.
He exhaled impatiently.
I'm from your future.
He stifled a groan. The lass was a bampot, addled, soft in the head, wandering about naked outside, accusing men of tupping her, thinking she was from the future, indeed.
The 21st century, to be precise. I was hiking in the hills near Loch Ness when I fell into a cave and discovered you sleeping.
He shook his head.
Cease this nonsense!
You said you wouldn't interrupt!
She jumped to her feet, much too close for his comfort.
It's hard enough for me to tell you this.
Drustin's eyes narrowed, and he backed up a step lest she touch him and he turn into a lustful beast again. She stood there, head tossed back. Her cheeks were flushed, her stormy eyes flashing, and she looked ready to pummel him, despite her diminutive size. She had courage, he'd give her that.
Go on, he growled.
I found you in the cave. You were sleeping, and funny symbols were painted on your chest. Somehow my falling on you woke you. You were confused, you had no idea where you were, and you helped me get out of the cave. You told me the strangest story I'd ever heard. You claimed you were from the 16th century, that someone had abducted and enchanted you, and you slept for nearly 5 centuries. You said the last thing you recalled was that someone had sent you a message to go to some glen near a loch if you wished to know who'd killed your brother. You said you went, but someone had drugged you and you started getting very tired.
Enchanted?
Drustin shook his head in amazement. The lass had an imagination that could compete with the finest bard. But she'd made her first mistake. He didn't have a dead brother. He had only Dagus, who was alive and hale. She took a deep breath and continued, undaunted by his blatant skepticism.
I didn't believe you either, Drustin. And for that, I'm sorry. You told me that if I accompanied you to Bandrocade, you would prove to me that you were telling the truth. We went to the stones, and your castle.
She swept a hand around the room.
This castle was a ruin. You took me into the circle.
She deliberately omitted the intense passion they shared therein, not wishing to alienate him further. With a wistful sigh, she continued.
And you sent me here, to your castle in your century.
Drustin blew out an exasperated breath.
Aye, she was truly a madwoman, and one who knew the old rumors well.
He knew the villagers loved to repeat the old tale that their ancestors had seen 2 entire fleets of Templars enter the walls of Castle Keltar centuries ago, never to come out again. Apparently, she'd heard that those pagan Highlanders could open doorways and had incorporated it into her madness.
But before I sent you back, using the stones in some pagan fashion,
he scoffed, not about to admit to such a thing.
I took your maidenhead, eh?
He said dryly.
I must confess you've chosen a most unique way to try to trap a man into a wedding. Choose one about whom strange rumors abound. Claim he took your virginity in the future, thus he can never argue conclusively against it.
He shook his head and smiled faintly.
I give you credit for your imagination and audacity, lass.
Gwyn glared at him.
For the last time, I am not trying to marry you, you overbearing, slack-jawed troglodyte!
Slack-jawed?
He shook his head and blinked.
Good, because I can't. I'm betrothed,
he said flatly. That would put an end to her crazed claims.
Betrothed?
She echoed, stunned. His eyes narrowed.
'Tis plain that doesn't please you. Careful, lest you further betray yourself.
But that doesn't make sense. You told me you weren't...
She trailed off, eyes wide. Yet another hole in her story, he mused darkly. He'd been betrothed for over 1/2 a year. Near all of Alba knew of his upcoming nuptials and were, like as not, watching with bated breath to see if he actually succeeded this time. And he would succeed.
I am. The match was agreed upon last Yuletide. Anya Elliot is due to arrive within the fortnight for our wedding.
Elliot!
She breathed. Aye, Degas is going to fetch her and bring her here for the wedding.
Gwyn turned her back to him, to conceal the shock and pain she knew must be etched all over her face. Betrothed? Her soulmate was going to marry someone else? He'd told her Degas had been killed coming back from the Elliots. He'd told her that he'd been betrothed, but she'd died. But he hadn't bothered to tell her they'd both been killed at the same time. Why? Had he loved his fiancée so much then? Had it been too painful for him to speak of? Her heart sank to her toes.
Not fair. Not fair, she wailed silently.
If she saved Degas, she would be saving Drustan's future wife, the woman he wanted to marry. Gwyn drew a shaky breath, hating her choices. This wasn't how things were supposed to go. She was supposed to tell him her story. Together they would unmask the villain, get married, and live happily ever after. She'd planned it all out this afternoon, even down to the details of her medieval wedding dress. She wouldn't mind staying in the 16th century for him. Willingly, she'd forfeit her Starbucks, tampons, and hot showers. So what if she couldn't shave her legs? He had sharp daggers, and eventually she'd quit nicking herself. Yes, it might be a bit rustic, but on the other hand, what did she have to go back to? Nothing. Not a damn thing. Empty, lonely life. Tears pressed at the backs of her eyes. She dropped her head, hiding behind her fringed bangs, reminding herself that she hadn't cried since she was 9, and crying wouldn't help now.
This is so not happening,
she muttered dismally.
You can't let his clan be destroyed no matter the price,
her heart said softly. After a time, she turned around and looked at him, swallowing the lump in her throat, acknowledging that there was no way she could stand by and watch him be abducted and his family be destroyed. So what that it might rip her to pieces in the process?
So much for falling in love,
she thought dismally.
Drustan,
she said, striving for the calmest tone of voice she could muster, when inside she was unraveling at every seam.
In the future, the last thing you said was for me to tell the past you the whole story, and to show you something. The something I was supposed to show you was my backpack, because it had things in it from my century that would have convinced you.
Show me this pack, he demanded.
I can't,
she said helplessly.
It disappeared.
Why does that not surprise me?
She bit her lip to keep from screaming with frustration.
The future you seemed to think you would be smart enough to believe me. But I'm beginning to realize the future you gave you a whole lot more credit than you deserve.
Cease and desist with your insults, lass. You provoke the very laird upon whom your shelter depends.
God, that was true, she realized. She was dependent upon him for her shelter. Although she was a smart woman, she suffered more than a few concerns about how a misplaced physicist might fend for herself in medieval Scotland. What if he never believed her?
I know you don't believe me, but there is something you must do, whether you believe me or not,
she said desperately.
You can't let Degas go get your fiancé yet. Please, I'm begging you, postpone the wedding.
He arched one dark brow.
Och, have out with it, lass. Ask me to marry you. I'll say nay, then you can hie yourself back when she came.
I am not trying to get you to postpone it so you'll marry me. I'm telling you, because they're going to die if you don't do something. In my time, you told me Degas was killed in a clan battle between the Montgomery and the Campbell when returning from the Elliots. You also told me that you'd been betrothed, but that she died. I think she must have been killed coming back here with Degas. According to you, he tried to help the Montgomery because they were outnumbered. If he interferes with that battle, they will both die. And you'd believe me then, wouldn't you? If I foretold those deaths? Don't make it cost that much. I saw you grieve.
She broke off, unable to continue. Too many mixed emotions were crashing over her. Disbelief that he wouldn't believe her, pain that he was engaged, exhaustion from the stress of the entire ordeal. She cast him a last pleading glance, then darted into her bedchamber before she turned into the emotional equivalent of Jell-O. After she'd slipped inside and closed the door, Druston gazed blankly at it. Her plea for his brother had sounded so sincere that he'd gotten chills and suffered an eerie sense of disagreeable familiarity. Her story couldn't be true, he assured himself. Many of the old tales hinted that the stones were used as gates to other places, legends never forgotten, passed down through the centuries. She'd like as not heard the gossip and, in her madness, made up a story that held a purely coincidental bit of truth. Had she faked the blood of her virginity? Mayhap she was pregnant and in desperate need of a husband. Aye, he could travel through the stones, that much of it was true. But everything else she claimed reeked of wrongness. If he'd ever gotten trapped in the future, he would never have behaved in such ways. He would never have sent a wee lass back through the stones. He couldn't begin to imagine the situation in which he might take a lass's maidenhead. He'd vowed never to lie with a virgin unless 'twas in the marriage bed. And he would never have instructed her to tell his past self such a story and expected himself to believe it. Ugh, thinking all this future self, past self, was enough to give a man a pounding head, he thought, massaging his temples. Nay, were he to get into such a situation, he would have simply come back himself and set things aright. Druston McKelter was infinitely more capable than she'd made him out to be. There was no point in getting unduly upset about her. His primary problem would be keeping his hands to himself, because, addled or no, he desired her fiercely. Still, he mused, mayhap he should send a full complement of guard with Dagus on the morrow. Mayhap the country wasn't as peaceful as it appeared from high atop the McKelter's mountain. Shaking his head, he strode to the boudoir door and slid the bolt from his side, locking her in. Then he grabbed the key from a compartment in the headboard of his bed, left his chamber, and locked her in from the corridor as well. Nothing would jeopardize his wedding. Certainly not some wee lass scampering about unattended, spouting nonsense that he'd taken her virginity. She would go nowhere on the estate unaccompanied by either him or his father. Dagus, on the other hand, he didn't plan to allow within a stone's toss of her. He turned on his heel and stalked down the corridor. Gwyn curled up on the bed and cried. Sobbed, really, with hot tears and little choking noises that gave her a swollen nose and a serious sinus headache. It was no wonder she hadn't cried since she was 9. It hurt to cry. She hadn't even cried when her father had threatened that if she didn't return to Triton Corp and finish her research, he would never speak to her again. Maybe a few of those tears leaked out now as well. Confronting Druston had been more awful than she'd imagined. He was betrothed, and by saving Dagus, she was saving Druston's future wife. Her overactive brain busily conjured torturous images of Druston in bed with Anya Elliot. No matter that she didn't even know what Anya Elliot looked like. It was clear from the way things were going that Anya would be Gwyn's antithesis, tall and slim and leggy. And Druston would touch and kiss tall, leggy Mrs. McKelter the way he'd touched and kissed Gwyn in the stones. Gwyn squeezed her eyes shut and groaned, but the horrid images were more vivid on the insides of her eyelids. Her eyes snapped open again.
Focus, she told herself. There is nothing to be gained by torturing yourself. You have a bigger problem on your hands.
He hadn't believed her. Not a word she'd said.
How could that be? She'd done what he'd wanted her to do, told him what had happened. She'd believed telling him the whole story would make him see the logic inherent,
but she was beginning to realize that 16th-century Druston was not the same man that 21st-century Druston had thought he was. Would the backpack have made that much of a difference, she wondered?
Yes.
She could have shown him the cell phone with its complex electronic workings. She could have shown him the magazine with the modern articles and date, her odd clothing, the waterproof fabric of her pack. She'd had rubber and plastic items in there, materials that even a medieval whatever he was, genius, wouldn't have been able to dismiss without further consideration. But the last time she'd seen the damn pack, it was spiraling off into the quantum foam.
Where do you suppose it ended up?
The scientist queried with childlike wonder.
Oh, hush, it's not here, and that's all that really signifies.
Gwyn muttered aloud. She was not in the mood to think about quantum theory at the moment. She had problems, all kinds of problems. The odds of her identifying the enemy without his help weren't promising. The estate was vast, and Sylvan had told her that, including the guards, there were 750 men, women, and children within the walls, and another 1,000 crofters scattered about, not to mention the nearby village. It could be anyone, a distant clan, an angry woman, a conquering neighbor. She had at most a month. And as recalcitrant as he was, not even willing to admit he could travel through the stones, she certainly couldn't expect him to be forthcoming with other information. Woodenly, she undressed and crawled beneath the covers. Tomorrow was another day. Eventually she'd get through to him somehow, and if she couldn't, she'd just have to save the McKelter clan all by herself.
And then what will you do?
Her heart demanded.
Catch the bouquet at his freaking wedding? Hire on as their nanny.
Grrr.
Well? Sylvan demanded, strolling into the great hall. Does she still claim you took her maidenhead?
Drustin leaned back in his chair. He quaffed the remains of his whiskey and rolled the glass between his palms. He'd been gazing into the fire, thinking of his future wife, trying to keep his mind off the temptress in the chamber that adjoined his. As the spirits had slid into his belly, his worries had eased a bit, and he'd begun to see dark humor in the situation.
Oh, aye. She even has a reason why I remain blissfully unaware of my breach of honor. 'Twould seem I took her in my future.
Sylvan blinked.
Come again.
I took her 500 years from now, Drustin said. And then I sent her back here to save me.
He couldn't hold it in any longer. He tossed his head back and laughed. Sylvan eyed him strangely.
How does she claim you came to be in the future?
I was enchanted,
Drustin said, shoulders shaking with mirth. It really was quite amusing, now that he reflected upon it. Since he wasn't currently looking at her, he wasn't worried that he might lose control of his lust and could see the humor more easily. Sylvan stroked his chin, his gaze intent.
So, she claims she woke you, and you sent her back?
Aye! To save me from being enchanted in the first place. She also, mumbled some nonsense about you and Dagus being in danger.
Sylvan closed his eyes and rubbed his index finger in the crease between his brows, a thing he did often when thinking deeply.
Drustin, you must keep an open mind. 'Tis not entirely impossible on the face of it,
he said slowly. Drustin sobered swiftly.
Nay, on the face of it, it's not, he agreed. 'Tis once you get into the details that you realize she's a wee bampot with little grasp on sanity.
I admit it's far-fetched, but...
Da! I'm not going to repeat all the nonsense she spouted, but I assure you, the lass's story is so full of holes that were it a ship, 'twould be kissing the sandy bed of the ocean.
Sylvan frowned consideringly.
I scarce see how it could hurt to take precautions. Mayhap you should pass some time with her, see what else she might learn about her.
Aye, Drustin agreed. I thought to take her to Ballinock on the morrow, see if anyone recognizes her and can tell us where to find our kin.
Sylvan nodded.
I will bide a wee with her myself, study her for signs of madness.
He cast Drustin a stern look.
I saw the way you looked at her and know that despite your misgivings, you desire her. If she's daft, as you say, I won't abide her being taken advantage of. You must keep her out of your bed. You have your future wife to think of.
I know,
Drustin snapped, all trace of amusement vanishing.
We need to rebuild the line, Drustin.
I know,
he snapped again.
Just so you know where your duties lie,
Sylvan said mildly.
Not betwixt an Adelpate's thighs.
I know,
Drustin growled.
On the other hand, if she weren't daft,
Sylvan began. but stopped and sighed when Drustin stomped from the room. Sylvan sat in pensive silence after his son had gone. Her story was nigh impossible to believe. How was one to countenance someone knocking upon one's door, claiming to have spent time with one in one's future? The mind summarily rejected it. It was too chafing a concept for even a druid to wrap his mind about. Still, Sylvan had swiftly run through a few complex calculations, and the possibility existed. It was a minuscule possibility, but a good druid knew it was dangerous to ignore any possibility. If her story were true, his son had cared for the lass so much that he'd taken her maidenhead. If her story were true, she knew Drustin had powers beyond most mortal men, and had cared for him enough to both give him her virginity and come back to save him. He wondered how much Gwen Cassidy truly knew about Drustin. He would speak with Nell, and have her casually mention a few things, observe the lass's reaction. Nell was a fine judge of character. He would spend time with her himself as well, not to question her, for words were without merit, lies easy to fabricate, but to study the workings of her mind as he would study an apprentice. Between the two of them, they would discern the truth. Drustin was clearly not demonstrating a level-headed response toward the lass. His eldest son could be so stubborn sometimes. After 3 failed betrothals, he was so blinded by doubts about himself, so hell-bent on wedding, that he was unwilling to entertain anything that might seem to threaten his upcoming nuptials. He was going to marry and tarry not in the process. Although Sylvan knew they needed to rebuild the Kelter line, he suspected marriage between Drustin and the Elliot lass would entail a lifetime of deception that would inevitably result in misery for both of them. A wee bampot was she, this Gwen Cassidy? Sylvan wasn't so certain about that. Chapter 16. Bassetta Alexander fumbled above the mantel for her yew sticks, dread coiling like a venomous snake in the pit of her stomach. A deeply superstitious woman, her charms were as necessary to her as the air she breathed. Of late, she'd taken to scrying daily, frantic to discover what threat was moving ever nearer her son. When she and Nevin had first moved to Castle Keltar, she'd been thrilled to return to the Highlands. No Flatlander was she. She'd ached for many years to return to the misty caps, shimmery locks, and heathery moors of her youth. The Highlands were closer to the heavens. Even the moon and stars seemed within reach atop the mountains. Nevin's post was a prime one, priest to an ancient and wealthy clan. Here he could live out his life in security and contentment, with no risk of the kind of battles in which she'd lost her other sons, for the MacKeltar housed the second finest garrison in all of Alba, second only to the king. Aye, for the first fortnight she'd been elated. But then, shortly after their arrival, she'd cast her yew sticks and seen a dark cloud on her horizon rolling inexorably nearer. Try as she might, she'd been unable to coax her sticks or her runes or her tea leaves to tell her more. Just a darkness. A darkness that threatened her only remaining son. And then, the last time she'd read them, the darkness had extended to one of Sylvan's sons, but she'd been unable to determine which one. Sometimes, she felt that great sucking darkness was reaching for her, trying to drag her into it. She would sit for hours, clutching her ancient runes, tracing their shapes, rocking back and forth until the panic eased. Vague fear had been her lifelong companion, even as a small lass. She dare not lose Nevin, lest those shadows gain substance and tear at her with wicked claws. Sighing, she smoothed her hair with trembling fingers, then cast the sticks upon the table. Had she cast them with Nevin in the hut, she would have gotten yet another tedious lecture about God and his mysterious ways.
"Thank you very much, lad, but I trust my sticks, not your invisible god who refuses to answer me when I ask him why he gets 4 of my sons and I get only 1.
Studying the design, the coil in her belly tightened. Her sticks had fallen in the identical pattern they'd formed last week. Danger. But she had no way of knowing from what quarter. How was she to prevent it if she knew not whence it came? She dare not fail with her 5th and final son. Alone,
that hungry blackness would get her, carry her off into what must surely be the oblivion of hell.
"Tell me more,"
she beseeched.
"I can't do anything until I know which lad presents the danger to my son."
Despairing, she gathered them, then suddenly changed her mind and did something a good fortune-teller rarely risked lest evil forces, ever attuned to fear and despair, cunningly ply a false design upon the limbs. She cast them again, a second time, in quick succession to the first. Fortunately, the fates were inclined to be gentle and generous, for when the sticks clattered upon the table, she was granted a vision, a thing that had happened only once before in her life. Etched in her mind's eye, she clearly saw the eldest McKelter lad. Drustin, scowling, she heard the sound of a woman weeping, and she saw her son, blood dripping from his lips. Somewhere in the vision she sensed a fourth person, but couldn't bring that person's face into focus. After a moment, she decided the fourth person must not be relevant to Nevin's danger, since she couldn't see him or her. Mayhap an innocent onlooker. The woman weeping must be the woman her Styx had told her would kill her son, the lady that Drustin McKelter would wed. She squeezed her eyes shut, but could glimpse only a wee form and golden hair, not a woman she'd e'er seen before. The vision faded, leaving her shaking and drained. She had to somehow put a stop to things before Drustin McKelter wed. She knew he was betrothed. All of Alba knew he was betrothed for the fourth time. But Nevin was infuriatingly close-mouthed about the occupants of Castle Kelter. She had no idea when the wedding was to be, or even when the bride would be arriving. Of late, the more she pried for news from her son, the more recalcitrant he became. He was hiding things from her, and that frightened her. When they'd first arrived, he'd spoken freely about the castle and its occupants. Now it was rare for him to mention anything about his days at the castle but for tedious details concerning his work on the chapels. The Alexander's hut nestled in a valley on the outskirts of Ballinoch, nearly 20 furlongs from the castle proper. Nevin, overseeing the renovation of 2 chapels on the estate, walked each day, but such a tiring journey was beyond her aching joints and swollen limbs. Walking to Ballinoch, a furlong to the south, was possible, and on good days she could manage 5 or more, but 20 and back again were impossible. If she couldn't wheedle the information from her son, mayhap if the weather held, she could walk to the village. Nevin was all she had left, and no one, not the McKelter, not the church, nay, not even God, was taking her last son away.
"Here, horse, horse, horse,"
Gwyn cooed. The creature in question peeled back its lips, showing frightfully large teeth, and she hastily retracted her hand. Ears flattened, tail swishing, it regarded her balefully. 10 minutes ago, the groom had brought 2 horses out of the stable and tied them loosely to a post near the door. Drustin had led the largest one off without a backward glance, leaving her alone with the other. It had taken every bit of her nerve to trudge up to it, and there she stood near the door of the stables, trying to woo the infernal thing. Mortified, she glanced over her shoulder, but Drustin was several yards away, conversing with the stable master. At least he wasn't watching her make a fool of herself. She was city-born and raised, by God. How was she supposed to know what to do with 1,000 pounds of muscle, hair, and teeth? She tried again, this time with no tempting appendage proffered, merely a sweet murmur. But the obstinate creature nonchalantly lifted its tail, and a warm stream hissed on the ground. Hastily snatching her slippered foot from the line of fire, she arched a brow, nostrils flaring. So much for thinking this day was going to be better than last night. It had begun with promise. 6 maids had toted up a steaming bath, and she'd gratefully soaked her still tender from lovemaking body. Then Nell had brought breakfast and coffee to her chamber. Fueled by caffeine-induced optimism after gulping the dark, delicious brew, she dressed and strolled off to find Drustin, to continue her efforts to convince him of the danger he was in. But the moment she'd walked into the Great Hall, Drustin had informed her they were going to the village. On horses. Gwyn cast a dubious glance at the beast. She'd never met a horse in person, and now she was supposed to entrust her small self to that monstrous, muscular, haughty creature.
It reminded her of Drustin in both stature and demeanor, and it didn't like her any more than she trusted it. Oh, the horse was beautiful, and at first she'd admired its lovely doe-like eyes and silky nose, but it also had sharp hooves, big teeth, and a tail that, ouch, kept flicking her across the rump every time she got too close.
"Here, horse, horse, horse,"
she muttered, tentatively extending her hand again. She held her breath as the horse made a soft whinnying sound and nudged its nose toward her fingers. At the last minute, her resolve slipped, and envisioning strong white teeth neatly nipping her fingers off, she fisted her hand, and the horse, of course, turned away and flattened its ears again. Swish! Behind her, Drustin watched with amazement.
"Have you never seen a horse before, lass? They do not answer to a horse. They have no idea they are horses. 'Tis like sauntering into the forest, saying, 'Here, boar, 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 I should like to roast you for dinner.'"
She shot a startled, embarrassed look over her shoulder.
"Of course I've seen a horse before."
Her brows puckered, and she added sheepishly,
"In a book? And don't get all cocky on me. You should have seen your face when you saw a car for the first time."
"A car?"
"In my time, we have wagons that need no horses to pull them."
He scoffed and dismissed her statement completely.
"So, you've never ridden a horse," he remarked dryly, tossing himself up into his saddle.
It was a lovely motion, full of casual grace, supreme confidence, and male power to the nth degree. It made her downright irritable.
"Show off?"
He tossed her a lazy grin.
"Although I've not heard that before, 'twould seem you weren't complimenting me."
"It means arrogant and smug, flaunting your skill."
"One must work with what one has."
His eyes lingered on her lips, then dropped to her breasts before he dragged his gaze away.
"I saw that. Don't look at me like that. You're betrothed,"
she said stiffly, resenting Anya Elliot clear down to the marrow in her bones.
"Ach, but I'm not yet wed," he muttered, looking at her from beneath his brows.
"That is a despicable attitude."
He shrugged.
"'Tis the way of men."
He wasn't about to discuss his true beliefs on the issue with her. His true beliefs were one reason why his attraction to her disturbed him so much. He'd far prefer to be chaste for at least a few weeks before his wedding, and once wed, would not stray. Yet she was an irresistible temptation. But he was strong. He would resist her. To prove it, he smiled down at her. What was his deal today? Gwyn wondered suspiciously. She knew he hadn't decided to believe her. She'd overheard him talking with Dagus before he'd seen her entering the hall. He'd said he was taking her to the village to see if anyone recognized her.
"I can walk,"
she announced.
"It's a day's walk,"
he lied, and shrugged again.
"But if you wish to walk 20 furlongs...
Without further ado, he turned his mount and slowly started off. She trailed along behind him, muttering under her breath. Ha! He thought she didn't know what a furlong was, but she knew all kinds of measurements. A furlong was roughly 1/8 of a mile, which meant the village was approximately 2.5 miles, and while it certainly wouldn't take her all day, there was her predisposition toward inertia to consider. He stopped and tossed her a look that said, "Last chance." Shielding her eyes from the sun with her hand against her brow, she scowled up at him. Again he wore leather trews that cased his powerful thighs, a linen shirt, his leather bands and leather boots. There was just something irresistible about a well-muscled man in leather. His dark hair spilled unbound over his shoulders, and as she gazed at him, he gave that achingly familiar lion-like toss of his mane, and her hormones roared in response. She refused to think about what she knew lay in his snug leather trews, knew from personal experience, because she'd had her hand wrapped around it, because she'd liked to wrap her lips around it. She tugged her bangs behind her ear with a dismal sigh. When he nudged his mount near, she skittered back. A corner of his lip rose in a mocking smile.
"So there are some things you fear, Gwyn Cassidy."
She narrowed her eyes.
There's a difference between fear and a lack of familiarity. Anything one does for the first time can be daunting. I have no experience with horses. Therefore, I have not yet developed proper responses. Yet is the significant word there.
Then come, O brave one.
He extended his hand. 'Tis apparent you won't be able to ride on your own. If you do not ride with me, you'll have to walk. Behind me, he added, just to irritate her.
Her hand shot up toward his. With a snort of amusement, he clamped his fingers about her wrist and lifted her, deftly sliding her into position on the saddle in front of him.
Easy, he murmured to his mount.
Or was it to her? She wasn't sure which of them was more skittish.
He adjusted her lightweight cloak and encircled her waist with his arms. Gwyn closed her eyes as a wave of longing flooded her. He was touching her, all over. His chest was pressed against her back, his arms around her to guide the tethers, his thighs pressing against hers. She was in heaven. The only thing that could make it better would be for him to remember her, to know her and look at her the same way he had their last night together in the Circle of Stones. Was it possible that the memory was somewhere in him? And if she only found the right words, he would recall? On a cellular level, wouldn't he have to possess the knowledge? Perhaps deeply buried, forgotten, and ethereal as a misty dream? She silently savored the contact, then realized that neither he nor the horse was moving. His breath was warm, fanning the nape of her neck. It took all her will not to shift in the saddle and plant a deep, wet kiss on those lips that were only a turn of her head away.
"Well, don't we move forward or something?" she asked.
If they stayed still, touching like this, she couldn't be held responsible for her actions. Some of his silky hair had fallen forward over her shoulder, and she fisted her fingers to prevent them from reaching up and caressing it. What was he doing back there? It wouldn't do her any good to start fantasizing about him. This, Drustin, was a month younger than hers, and a lifetime short of a lick of common sense. He was taking her to Balinok to see if anyone recognized her, the dolt.
"Aye," he said hoarsely.
His thighs tensed, and he spurred the horse into motion. Gwyn nearly lost her breath as the animal moved beneath her. It was frightening. It was dizzying. It was exhilarating. Mane ruffling in the breeze, the horse made occasional soft, horsey grunts as it galloped over the emerald and heather-filled field. It was an incredible experience. In her mind's eye, she envisioned herself bent low over its back, soaring through the meadows and hills. She'd always wanted to learn to ride, but her parents had dictated her strenuous educational curriculum, and it had permitted no outside activities. The Cassidys were thinkers, not doers. There was one more way she could distance herself from them, she decided. She could become a doer and think as little as possible.
"I would like to learn to ride,"
she informed him over her shoulder. She was going to be there a while, after all, and it certainly couldn't hurt to acquire some medieval skills. She couldn't bear being without the freedom of transportation. In her century, when her car was in the shop, she felt trapped. She suspected it would be wise to gain all the independence she could. What if he never believed her? Married his bimbo and refused to return her to her own time? Panic flooded her at that thought. She definitely needed some basic skills.
"Mayhap the stable master can fit you into his schedule," he said against her ear. "But I hear tell he makes his apprentices shovel out the stables."
She shivered. Had his lips brushed it deliberately, or had the horse's gait pressed him suddenly forward?
"Perhaps Dagus could teach me,"
she countered waspishly.
"I do not think Dagus will be teaching you a blurring thing,"
he said in a dangerous voice, and that time his lips did brush her ear.
"And I bid you keep your lips off my brother, lest I confine you to your chambers."
What game was he playing? Had that been jealousy lacing his deep brogue, or wishful thinking on her part?
"Besides, as long as you fear the horse, he can sense it and will not respond well. You must respect him, not fear him. Horses are sensitive, intelligent creatures, full of spirit."
"Kind of like me, huh?"
she said cheekily. He made a sound of strangled laughter.
Nay, horses do as they're told. I doubt you ever do. And you certainly have a lofty opinion of yourself, don't you?
No more so than you.
I see spirit in you, lass. But you demonstrate naught else, and so long as you continue to lie to me, respect will never be part of it. Why not tell the truth?
Because I already did, she snapped. And if you don't believe me, then why don't you take me back through the stones?
Gwyn suggested, inspired by a sudden thought. If he would only take a short one-day jaunt into the future, she could show him her world, her cars, show him where she'd found him. Why hadn't she thought of that last night?
Nay, he said instantly. The stones may never be used for personal reasons. 'Tis forbidden.
Ha! You just admitted you can use them!
She pounced.
Drustin growled near her ear.
Besides, for what other reasons would you use them? On some secret mission?
She scoffed.
And it wouldn't be personal reasons, it would be to save your clan, she added. I think that's important enough to merit using them.
Enough, lass. I will not continue this discussion.
But—
Enough! No more buts. And quit squirming.
They rode the rest of the way to the village in silence. Balinok, although they called it the village, was in truth a thriving city. Drustin believed a more prosperous and peaceful city had never existed, and those who resided in Balinok kept quiet about it when they traveled, to preserve the serenity of their highland home. The Keltar druids kept a careful watch over Balinok, performing the ancient rituals to ensure fertility of clan and crop. They'd also placed strategic formations, known as wards, about the countryside, which worked to dissuade the curious traveler from venturing too far up the mountain. It was their city. They would always nurture and protect it. Aye, he thought, his gaze skimming the thatched rooftops, it was a lovely village. Centuries ago, hundreds had settled in the rich vale protected by the Keltar. Over the centuries, hundreds had become thousands, far enough away that they had few visitors, yet near enough to the sea to trade. Balinok housed 4 kirks, 2 mills, chandlers, tanners, weavers, tailors, potters, blacksmiths, an armorer, shoemakers, and sundry other craftsmen. It was to the goldsmith they were going first, so Drustin could check on the intricate gold leaf with which the talented craftsman was embellishing one of Sylvan's treasured tomes. As they entered the outskirts of the village, Drustin observed Gwyn as dispassionately as possible, which was difficult with her squarely between his thighs. He dreaded